Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. The Irish literature tradition is a strong one, both historically and in contemporary terms, from Jonathan Swift through James Joyce through the writers of today, like playwright Brian Friel. But perhaps no name looms as large as poet William Butler Yeats. W.B. Yeats won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1923, and his work continues to hold influence a century later. Today, in fact, is the 150th anniversary of Yeats's birth, known to many as Yeats Day. Martin Enright is president of the Yeats Society, based in Ireland. He spoke not long ago at UW-Milwaukee and also visited with Lake Effect's Bonnie North, and he explained why Yeats remains such a formidable literary figure.
Why Yeats? Because Yeats was big, as the current director of the Yeats Summer School says. He was big in every sense of the word. He was able to delve into the old mythologies, the Celtic mythologies, bring that into his work, make statements about times of war, 1913, 1916, and he's a man for the future. His words will never, ever decrease in their meaning and their content. So he is just publishing poetry from 1880s, 1889, right down to 1939, for 50 years. And why we are centrally involved in Sligo is that he has used the place names, the mythology, the personalities of Sligo right through his work, right through from 1880s, 1920s, 1930s, to 2 days before he died. And his last poem, it's always the last poem in the selected poems, is called Under Benbulben. And Benbulben is a mountain in Sligo, and you can see the mountain from his graveside because his great-grandfather was rector there in 1811, from 1811 until 1846.
I was going to say, he had family connections there. He used to spend his summers there.
Yes.
In Sligo.
Because his father, to the mother's disappointment, became an artist instead of continuing the life of law. And an artist in the 19th century didn't get paid very well. They don't get paid too well these days. So he was one of those artists who could never really complete a work in time. And while in London, he couldn't afford to pay the rent. And they moved addresses about 10 times. So she came back to the family home of 11 bedrooms in Sligo town. And her father and his company owned the ships that ran from Sligo to the north of Ireland, Scotland, England, Liverpool on a weekly basis. So she came up from London, up and aboard the train and the boat to Sligo. And Jack Yeats admits in his work, in his life, he says that while I spent my summers there as a young boy, he spent actually about 10 years there. Continuously, and he continued to come there for the following 20 years. And he says that he rarely did a painting without some aspect of Sligo in his imagination in that painting, of all his work. So that's a huge, huge credit to the people of Sligo and the landscape. And then he was able to come way, way beyond that. So far in Sligo, we've been talking about Yeats and his works for over 50 years, and it goes on.
Was it his ability to take those old stories and refashion them and rethink them and repurpose them that makes him so relevant to us now?
Well, he did that in terms of, I mean, he is the hero himself. Cú Chulainn is the hero, the old Gaelic mythological figure. And so he has plays based on Cú Chulainn. It's a whole Cú Chulainn saga. But, further to that, he is able to think deeply into the mind, into the soul of somebody. And he delved into the occult. He delved into Eastern religion. He was interested in the Japanese theatre. He was so world-wise, really. And the scope and the breadth is enormous of what he achieved.
Yes. I mean, starting the Abbey Theatre, for one thing.
Exactly.
I mean, he was one of the founders.
With Lily Gregory.
Yeah.
Martin, they met, and eventually, late 1900s, 1904, is the foundation of the Abbey. And it was hard then to make a statement and to be the creator of a theatre for Ireland, a national theatre. And there were riots, as well documented. But, to have the foresight to do it. He didn't have much means himself, but I suppose he was supported by patrons in the arts. And he was supported by a family. I mean, his uncle would give him £1 a week. I saw a lovely letter recently where he's in London and he writes to the Fenian, John O'Leary in Dublin, asking for the loan of £1. Because Miss Gunn was coming to town, to London, and he wanted to be sure to have money for the taxi and take her out on a few evenings.
And Miss Gaughan is a woman that he proposed to how many times? And she turned him down.
Yes.
Many,
a number of times.
Yes.
Well, fortunately for us, she said that the fact that she didn't marry him, you know, it would have been a great loss to the world of poetry if she said yes. So because she said no so often, he would compose another lovely love poem. And he wishes for the claws of heaven. I mean, what a beautiful piece of work. It's so sublime that it has never been bettered, I don't think, as a little short lyrical love poem. But it might be nice to read.
Yes, I was going to say, it's a perfect opportunity to do that. Yeah. So if you would.
Had I the heavens in brighter cloths, inwrought with golden and silver light, the blue and the dim and the dark cloths of night and light and the half-light, I would spread the cloths under your feet, but I, being poor, have only my dreams. I have spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly, because you tread on my dreams.
Hmm. That poem, at the moment in Ireland, there's a referendum coming up on the marriage equality. And the yes people, that last line of that poem is their slogan, tread softly because you tread on our dreams.
And so Yeats is speaking
today. Tread on my dreams, yes.
He's speaking to us very directly right now.
Yeah, he's quoted by President Obama, President Clinton, Van Morrison, rock stars, Sinead O'Connor, you know, I mean, he's quoted by a lot of people who have a lot of influence in the world.
And you talked about some of his war poetry. How did he feel about Irish independence?
Yeah, we've had lectures on the topic. Certainly he was ambivalent about war, about rebellion, and why wouldn't he be? He was a man of culture, of supreme ideology, and I mean, he came from, some people say, an Anglo-Irish background. It was certainly, he wasn't an Anglo-Irish background in terms of the family never inherited huge estates, except way back from the mother's side. The original John Yeats, who comes as rector to Drumcliffe, he was married to Mary Butler. She was of the Butlers of Kilkenny. But so he was in this mixed background, you know, the Church of Ireland Protestant ascendancy, who had come from a certain past. He could see the idealism of Pearse and MacDonagh and MacBride, and yet he was probably aware of the land question was basically settled by 1900. So, you know, looking at hindsight on it, we can see how he was sort of ambivalent about the whole thing of rebellion. He, I suppose, immortalises the work of these men by Easter 1916, one of the great poems of his canon.
Yeah.
In fact, it's interesting for me, coming from Sligo, that he has, in the collected poems, you've got 15 volumes referenced. And there are seven after 1921, there are seven before it. And 1921 has that poem, Easter 1916. It also has, it's called, the collection is called Michael Robartes and the Dancer. And it includes On a Political Prisoner, a total, complete poem to Maud Gonne, or to Countess Markowitz, Under Saturn and Towards Break of Day. And in Under Saturn, he has the line, there is upon the mountainside, he refers to the waterfall at Ben Bulbin, which is an iconic piece of landscape in Sligo. Some of the great scholars used to talk and say that, oh, well, Yeats referred to Sligo as early poetry. And I mean, it's completely untrue, because here we have in 1921, he has published Under Saturn, Easter 1916, On a Political Prisoner, and Towards Break of Day, with Sligo references in all four of them. And then 2 days before he died, you have Under Ben Bulbin, and even Are You Content a bit before it. But this poem, Under Saturn, he talks about his Middleton and Pollexfen cousins and ancestors. His mother was Susan Mary Pollexfen, and her mother was a Middleton, and the grandfather, Pollexfen. And at the end of it, he says, he's referring to his uncle, Alfred Pollexford. He says, and surely after 20 years it was time to come. I am thinking of a child's vow sworn in vain, never to leave that valley his fathers called their home. Mm. Good praise for the Sligo landscape. And in Easter 1916, he says, what voice more sweet than hers? When young and beautiful, she rode to harriers. This man had kept a school and rode our winged horse. This is a Patrick Pearse himself. So that's the reference to it, to Countess Markowitz. And then a complete poem to her, On a Political Prisoner, when long ago I saw her ride under Ben Bulben to the meet, the beauty of her countryside, with all youth's lonely wildness stirred, she seemed to have grown clean and sweet, like any rock-bred seaborn bird. Seaborn, or balanced on the air, when first it sprang out of the nest upon some lofty rock to stare upon the cloudy canopy, while under its storm-beaten breast cried out the hollows of the sea. Mm. You know, very evocative.
Beautiful.
Material there in that. And this is published in 1921. And the following poem, Towards Break of Day, I thought there is a waterfall upon Ben Bulben's side that all my childhood counted dear. Were I to travel far and wide, I could not find a thing so dear. My memories had magnified so many times childish delight. So he wouldn't have been in Sligo much in those days, but because his uncle died in 1910, he didn't come very much after that. He last came to Sligo in 1929 and visited Markery Castle and Elsinore Lodge, that ruin by the sea. So the legacy is immense. And right around this time, this week of June 13th, there are about 300 events tied in with the idea of Yeats 150. Now, Yeats 150 is an innovative project by one of our politicians, actually, Labour Senator, Senator Susan O'Keefe. And she got the backing of the Irish government to create an awareness of Yeats locally, nationally and worldwide. And it began with the first moon in January. And it'll finish with the last full moon in December. One of the projects is whereby the full moon each month, there's a harp being played somewhere in Ireland, a harp recital. And the embassies in Tokyo, South America, I think several other locations around the world are actually doing something active to remember Yeats and his work.
At the Irish embassies in these countries.
Yeah, 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 throughout the year. So it's a whole series of events. And what will happen, very unique, happening on June 13th, on the birthday, in Sligo, the Poets Laureates of Ireland, Northern Ireland, England, Scotland and Wales and President Michael D. Higgins will be in Sligo for a unique event.
How amazing to have that many wonderful poets in one place.
Oh. She's pulled it off.
Yeah.
<It's a coup. laughs>
How wonderful that is. Yeah. That is.
So that has captured the public imagination. And the scholars will come and debate topics like Yeats and politics, Yeats and women, Yeats and the occult, the vision, etc., over the 2 weeks of the summer school. That'll be an academic event. But it's also tied in with poetry and drama and music at night. So it's
as it should be.
It's the time to be in Sligo.
It is. Well, I'm hoping that you will leave us with just some thoughts. A poem, of course, but before you get to whichever one you choose, what is his legacy going forward? You know, what is the most important thing? If you know nothing about Yeats, what is the most important thing to know about him?
He was creator of a body of work that has not been paralleled. It's everlasting. And it will be, and those the lyric poems, delving into the occult, the more difficult areas, our thoughts on the future, I think is his legacy. Because he not only writes poetry, but he has a body of plays, his autobiographies, his memoirs are all there in the public domain. I think that'll be an object, and it's a beauty of it's a thing forever.
Wonderful. So, well, what will you leave us with?
I think, Under Ben Bulben is a poem is, you know, two or three pages long, but the last couple of stanzas, I think, are always valedictory, and they make a point about the importance of work and poetry. Irish poets, learn your trade, sing whatever is well made, scorn the sort now growing up, all out of shape from toe to top, their unremembering hearts and heads, base-born products of base beds, sing the peasantry. And then, hard-riding country gentlemen, the holiness of monks, and after, porter drinkers, randy laughter, sing the lords and ladies gay, that were beaten into the clay through seven heroic centuries. Cast your mind on other days, that we, in coming days, may be still the indomitable Irishry. Under bare Ben Bulben's head, in Drumcliff churchyard, Yeats is laid. An ancestor was rector there, long years ago, a church stands near. By the road an ancient cross, no marble, no conventional phrase, on limestone quarried near the spot. By his command, these words are cut. Cast a cold eye on life on death. Horseman, pass by.
Martin Enright, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Martin Enright is the president of the Irish-based Yeats Society. He spoke with Bonnie North while he was in Milwaukee earlier this spring to speak at UW-Milwaukee. Today is the 150th anniversary of the birth of W.B. Yeats.